Good morning, everyone. Today, we are reading from Path to Shiva, Lesson 37. What are the two paths? In Hindu society, there are two ways to live our adult life. We call them the two paths. Most people follow the family path. A rare few follow the monastic path. A married couple has great responsibilities. They create and run a home together. They raise their children as spiritual, well-educated citizens of their nation. They provide support to the young, the aged, and the monastic community. The Tirukkural summarizes, "The foremost duty of family life is to serve duly these five: God, guests, kindred, ancestors, and oneself." Married life begins with the wedding ceremony, where vows are taken to be faithful and follow Dharma for life. Monastics follow a different path. Instead of having a spouse and children, they embrace the whole world as their family. They have two goals: to serve humanity and realize God. They renounce name and fame. Their focus is worship, meditation, and yoga, which makes them pure and wise. They inspire and uplift those on the householder path. Some wander or live alone, and others join monasteries. Some are dynamic teachers. Some are swamis with many followers. And others are unheralded hermits. In Saivism, most monastics are men, but there are also orders for women. Monastic life begins with vows to stay unmarried and celibate, devoted to God, gods, and Guru. Most Hindu monks wear orange robes. Others wear white or yellow robes. Some shave their heads, while others have long hair and beards. The Tirukkural praises both paths. "Behold those who have weighed the dual nature of things and follow the renunciate's way. Their greatness illumines the world. Their greatness illumines the world." Domestic life is rightly called virtue. The monastic path, rightly lived beyond blame, is likewise good. The key is to choose your path carefully and follow it faithfully. We have a quote from Gurudeva. The two paths, householder and renunciate. Every young man has to choose between them. The choice is his and his alone as to how his soul is to live through the birth karmas of this incarnation. Both paths take courage, great courage, to step forward and embrace the responsibilities of adult life. As I mentioned before in my talks, I was working for many years with the University Hindu Students in Texas, Hindu Students Association, and they learned a great deal from us, of course, but I think I learned even more from them, and as to how Hinduism is impacting their lives. And one of the points came up at one of the seminars, and it was asked something like this: "We're supposed to be detached from the world, but how can we do so if our career is a worldly one, such as being an investment banker?" That was the question. So I asked, "Well, where did you hear that you were supposed to be detached from the world?" And the person, and also a second person who asked a similar question, said, they weren't sure where they heard it, but that's anyway what they were supposed to be doing, be detached from the world. I have a graphic on it in one of my keynotes that there's a group of blue people walking left, and then this one person is red and he's walking right, getting detached from the world. Well, I went on to explain that that's a misunderstanding of the two paths. That is not what Hindu Dharma is. Someone who is an investment banker is supposed to be an excellent investment banker. Not sit there and daydream, be detached from the world, supposed to do very well at it, and in fact do so well at it that can help society in a broader sense. I came up with the simple way of explaining the two paths, which is to reference the Tirukkural. That's why the Tirukkural is here. It has a section that is on Dharma, which in the Tirukkural is called Aram. It's an old Tamil word. It means the same thing as Dharma. The first section is called Illaram, or the householder path, and the section after that is called Turuvaram, or the renunciate path. And all you have to do is look at the chapter titles. You don't even have to read them. It's nicely laid out. And nowhere in the householder path does it say, be detached from the world. It doesn't say it. It's in the other one. It's in the renunciate path. So what's the focus on? Family life, the wife, children, possessing love, hospitality, speaking pleasant words, possessing self-control. That's a very important challenge that householders face. I remember one family with two small children. And small children, probably around 3 and 5, were running around the group eating, and father was kind of embarrassed that they were running around so much. And I said, don't worry, that's what they do at that age. And he said, you know, before I was married, I had much better self-control. That's what he said. Well, that's like being peaceful in a peaceful place, right? And that's where we start. But eventually we have to learn to be peaceful where it's not peaceful. So likewise, it's easier to have self-control when you live alone. But if you have a spouse and two young children, it's much harder to have self-control. But that's good, right? You're challenged. So the Tirukkural is saying, be challenged and improve your self-control. The final chapters are very important, and there's two of them on charity, understanding one's duty to give, and just charity, or EI. And the final chapter is on fame, puhal, or glory, and of course in our modern world there's many ways to become famous, some of them good and some of them questionable. And in the Tirukkural, there's only one, and that's through charity. In other words, it's another way of affirming that charity is very, very important for the householder. It's a way of balancing out having a lot. How do we balance out having all these nice things? By giving some of it away on a regular basis. That's the kind of detachment we need, not from the world in the sense of our profession, but from the world in the sense of our attachment to any material objects. Then we move over to the renunciate section. That's where we get this idea of detachment from the world. It says impermanence of all things. Renunciation, knowledge of truth, eradication of desire. So those are qualities that the monastic needs to cultivate. If the householder tries to cultivate it, it doesn't work. It's in conflict with family dharma. Of course, the householder's life is not one that's unchanging. It changes through the four ashramas. And the busiest time of life, of course, is raising the children. Once the children are raised, which is generally by one's 50s sometime, there's more time for religious practices. And then once one retires, no longer working to earn money, there's even more time for religious practices. So the religious practices, less involvement with the world naturally happens as one is older in those stages of family life. As is mentioned in the Path to Shiva lesson, monastics have two goals: to serve humanity and realize God. I misspelled my second two, instead of T-O, it's T-W-O. Two goals: to serve humanity and realize God. How do monastics serve humanity? Well, there's a variety of ways, and different monastic orders have different activities of emphasis. It's not all the same. For example, the Ramakrishna order in India, the monks themselves run hospitals, orphanages, and schools. Even in Singapore, they have an orphanage. But they don't do that in the USA. It's a different culture. In the USA, they just teaching Vedanta. But they're very busy in these types of activities. Other monastic orders do the same thing: hands-on, feeding the poor, providing medical care. The monks themselves do that. Well, Gurudeva chose other areas of service for us. He felt that those activities I just mentioned were more in the realm of family life, particularly in the West. There's no need for Hindu monks to become involved in running orphanages, hospitals, and schools in the West. He gave us two other kinds of services. Oh, I'll read that from the Sarvadharma Shastras. First one: Hinduism today is a public service of our monastic community to strengthen all Hindu traditions and to uplift and inform followers of Dharma everywhere. Every Hindu order has its public service, be it padasalas, hospitals, eye clinics, orphanages, schools, or feeding centers. Hinduism today is the primary form of public service designated by me for our Mattavasis. In case anyone forgot that. It was during a world tour through Singapore, Malaysia, Mauritius, Reunion, Africa, India, Nepal, Sri Lanka, Europe, and other countries that I realized Hinduism had no global voice and no network of communication. The Hindus in Durban had no idea what was happening with Hindus in Colombo. Those in London had no connection with Hindus in Canada. Thus, I was divinely directed by inner orders from our Yoga Swami Kailasa Parampara, by my Sadhguru in this life, to fulfill the crying need to create an international network that would interconnect all Hindus into one invincible front. Nicely written, isn't it? So that's our primary form of public service, Hinduism today. And we do put a lot of energy into it to maintain the quality, both in terms of writing and in terms of graphics. We have some of the best photographers in the world do our work, and some of the best Hindu artists do our work too. It's a very high caliber all the way around, and that's one of the reasons it's so well respected. It's just the publications in India generally just don't come up to that standard at all. And then we have a second area of public service. Hindu Heritage Endowment is a public service trust which seeks to establish and maintain permanent sources of income for Hindu institutions worldwide. So that's a secondary area. We don't put as much energy into that as we do Hinduism today, but it's an important activity, and it's just kind of slowly growing in the background, getting larger and larger, doing more and more service. The then as I was preparing for this talk, I ran into an interesting statement, which I thought I'd read for the benefit of the monks present. Those entering the serious life of sannyasa must be prepared to follow the traditional path of unrewarded sadhana through the years, apart from dear family and friends. Such is a way to reach the truth of yoga. It takes many, many years for the soul to thus ripen and mature. Unrewarded sadhana, interesting phrase. It's a bit like trying to grow an oak tree and look at it every day. You can be disappointed how fast it's growing, right? But if you come back 10 years later, you'll see some difference. Come back 20 years later, it's looking pretty good. 30 years, it's getting very impressive. So Gurudev's point is that even though one is on the monastic path, it's not a fast path. The spiritual unfoldment is a slow process. And therefore, even though we put in, say, a year of extra sadhana, doing more than we usually do, we don't necessarily see any immediate results. So that's what Gurudeva means by unrewarded. It's rewarded in the long run, but in the short one, we don't see the benefit, and then we wonder, is this working? Well, we need a longer time frame. And we need confidence that these practices have been working for thousands of years and no reason it shouldn't work now. You know, it's like the oak tree. You put it in the ground and the soil is reasonable, the distance of water, it knows what to do. Oh, spiritual unfoldment is the same. The practices do work, but they're slow. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day.